Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Tommy is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Well, we had a fun weekend, Sid.
We did, Justin.
I went and spoke at the Columbus Game Developers Expo. Hello to everyone who was so cool to us there.
You gave everybody great advice.
Mm-hmm. Grace showed us a knitted mm-hmm. colon.
That was impressive, and Charlie got to eat lots of mini cheese balls that were available backstage.
So appreciated.
So, and we also got to go to one of our favorite places on Earth.
COSAI, the Center of Science and Industry.
That's right. Now, when you say it that way, the Center of Science and Industry, although, well, I was going to say that doesn't sound as exciting, but actually to you, our listeners, maybe it does.
Maybe it does. Maybe that's right up your alley.
Maybe you're on the same page as us. COSAI is one of my favorite places because it's basically a big, amazing science museum in Columbus, Ohio.
Yep.
And if you have never been there and you live in that area, anywhere around there.
It's great.
Make
top
the trip.
Flight.
Favorite place to go as a kid
mm-hmm.
and as an adult.
Even after it switched buildings, it's still a delight.
Yeah, I didn't even realize it did.
Yeah, I used to be downtown next to the first Wendy's.
Well, COSAI is amazing, and it also gave me an idea for this week's show.
I'm Randy Sydney.
So in COSAI, they have, it's called Progress, I think. And it's like
called Progress is the name of the section.
A time-traveling tunnel through...
I think if memory
serves, old-timey towns
could be an embellishment of childhood that you used to walk through a little literal tunnel to get to this section. And I think there used to be cavemen. I don't really remember. But you go through two old-timey towns from like the 1800s and the 1950s and 60s. It's like my favorite thing. Yeah. It's like one of my favorite places.
And it's supposed to be about like the progress of technology and stuff.
Yeah.
Between the two. But they also have a little display that I was looking at in the old 1800s store, one of the store windows, of like medicine and old, you know, patent medicines and a doctor's medicine bag from that era. And I found myself like glued to the window trying to read every label on every bottle. And I thought, you know, it might be a neat idea to talk about what would be in a doctor's bag in whatever era of history.
All right. Well, Sydney, I've got an old-timey doctor's bag right here. Let me just set it on the table. And
that's the sound it made.
Open it up. Creak. And
mm-hmm.
Let me try my capo and see what kind of noise. It's not bad.
That's pretty good. I like this. This is like an old-timey radio show now.
And what do we find inside?
So I'm going to talk about a doctor's bag of the 1800s. This is probably geared towards the later 1800s because of some of the specific inventions that I'll name. Because obviously these things evolved quickly through these years. And thank you, COSAI, for the inspiration. So generally speaking, a doctor in this time period would want to carry very practical items with them that they were sure to use on most or all of their patients because they were hauling it around, usually making house calls.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to carry a bunch of unnecessary stuff in there. These also, if you think about it, like what kind of bag they would be carrying, if you think of like the classic, like big leather black bag.
Yeah.
There's that. But for some, it would even be more of like a saddle bag because they would be riding horseback on the frontier.
So cool.
To go see. Exactly.
So Dr. Quinn, medicine woman.
That it very much is. It's very cool. So it could be like a saddle bag. It could be like the traditional black bag. There were like medical boxes and cases as well that were better for.
I bet that guy probably got a lot of crap for the doctor's red bags. Think about that big lunkhead just carrying around a big dumb box full of medical stuff. What a jerk. Just get a bag.
It was like, no, like, maybe it's like daring to be different, like the kid at school who would carry the rolly bag, no, who had the like rolly backpack.
And the tape at the bottom is old, so it just like opens at inopportune moments and dumps all his stuff on his shoes.
I don't mean like a cardboard box. So, like I said, they were traveling a lot, so it had to be something that they could carry around. A lot of what would be inside a bag would be tools as opposed to a lot of medicines, although, as we'll talk about, some doctors may be more prone to carry more medications than others. And inside the bag, if you open it up, there were usually lots of little compartments. No matter what your bag looked like, you wanted lots of little compartments so that you could keep all your tools somewhere, and it might be numbered or labeled, usually like little numbers. I have an old military medical bag that I got when I was in Prague.
Cool.
And it's neat because when you flip it open, it has little numbers at each compartment, which I'm assuming like you would routinely put this medicine in this number, you know, you would know just by the number. But anyway, this was pretty standard to have it all kind of labeled and keep everything in order. So let's talk about the tools first, because most doctors, especially like general practitioners, but also surgeons, would be carrying tools over medicines in their bag. So one essential tool now, as was then, would be something like a stethoscope. Anytime after 1816, it would be an actual real deal stethoscope, because that's when they were invented. But prior to that, it would be like an ear trumpet.
I bet that's tough. That can't be much better than just like putting your ear on their chest and hoping for the best.
It's a little bit better, and it's one of those skills that you would have to acquire. It's not, you know, I mean, a stethoscope is a skill too. I don't want to pretend like the first time you pick it up, you're instantly great at hearing heart sounds. But it's not probably as difficult a skill as the ear trumpet would have been to acquire. So you had to have that. You would have had some things like a folding magnifying glass.
To look at warts closer.
Yes, to look at various lesions and whatnot more closely. And because like they just look so sciencey, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to have lancets. Now, why would you have lancets?
To lance boils.
Yes, sure.
Woo!
To lance boils. That would be a great reason to have a lance.
I could have been an 1800s doctor is what I'm starting to think.
You would also want to have lancets or a small kit of scalpels or maybe a fleam. Do you remember the fleam? We talked about the fleam.
Oh, what's the fleam? I know we talked about it.
It looks like a little like pocket knife, like Swiss Army knife kind of thing. It's all folded up and then you unfold it and it's got a bunch of triangular shaped blades that are great for opening a blood vessel in the event one needs to be bled.
Great.
So a lot of these tools were mainly for bleeding your patient, which of course we don't use as often today.
Not so much.
At least not for that purpose. And as you go into the later 1800s, some of these would be less likely. You know, you wouldn't necessarily find a fleam because bleeding had begun to lose interest.
Yeah. You know, it's not as hot of a commodity.
I was going to say, like, efficacy, but, like, it was never effective. It was just people stopped doing it so much. You might have an eyedropper for, you know.
Drops in eyes.
For putting drops in eyes. And after 1867, you may have a thermometer because thermometers actually, the original thermometer was invented prior to that, but the original thermometer was huge. It was very long and it was very fragile.
And it was four butts only.
Well, I mean, that is the most accurate temperature, and Justin.
You can't put it in the mouth. Like, it was that big. It's got to be for butts. Think about it.
I am, and I'm still not clear.
It's like, think about how silly that would look to have a giant thermometer in your mouth.
I mean, it's very long.
Right.
What, do you think it looks less silly to have a giant thermometer sticking out of your butt?
No, but that you would have to do in privacy, so nobody would see you.
A rectal temperature is the most accurate temperature,
yeah,
to be fair. Anyway, they were very long, and they were fragile, and like they had mercury in them. So they weren't the best thing to just carry around in a doctor's bag.
Mm-hmm.
So after 1867, you see the invention of small portable thermometers that are easier for you to actually take from place to place and check for fevers.
It must be exciting.
Prior to those, doctors had to be pretty good at feeling foreheads.
That seems so scattershot to me. That's like unnerving. But I guess like what? I guess on the other hand, yeah, he's got a fever. What do you want to do? I don't know. Nothing. Not different, I guess, from what I thought.
No, like, I mean, the treatment's going to be the same, right? Bleed him.
Bleed him.
Bleed him. No, you know, actually, they've done studies to like test how good parents are at feeling foreheads on kids and predicting fevers. Mm-hmm. And they're actually pretty decent.
Yeah, I feel like I have a pretty good sense of it with Charlie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I think, I mean, we're wrong sometimes, but we do an okay job.
Yeah.
We could get thermometers now, though. So, like, get a thermometer.
We get a thermometer, folks.
along the lines of bleeding, you could also get a scarificator. Do you remember those things? They're like these little, like, spring-loaded, round, like, cylindrical devices that you would hold on your skin and then push a button and, like, multiple blades would spring out and cut you at once so that you could bleed somebody more effectively and efficiently. Ah. Or they were later used for vaccination against smallpox. That was part of how that was performed, was using this device.
Ugh.
So you may have had one of those in your kit. That would look particularly intimidating, I think. You would have a small selection of things like forceps, tweezers, scissors, just really, you know, kind of practical things you might need for removing various debris, or a small sewing kit for suturing.
Stitching people back up.
For stitching people up, that kind of thing. You might have something like some scales.
To measure out dosage?
Mm-hmm. If you are going to mess with medicines, you might need some scales. Because
if you're going to mess with medicines, what a cool time.
Because you're probably not bringing pre-mixed, pre-prepared medications most of the time. Right. A lot of it, doctors are kind of measuring out for themselves. Either they're creating for themselves, or they're buying concentrated kind of mixes that have to be diluted and stuff. So anyway, you might have some scales, and like a mortar and pestle would be a very common thing you might find if you were going to carry a lot of medications. And along those same lines, syringes and needles would be pretty essential if you were going to administer medications. Especially one of the earliest things that a doctor might carry with them standardly would be some kind of opiate.
Oh, sure.
So morphine or something.
Sure.
Or heroin.
That'll fix them up.
Right. And so you might have something like that, and you would need a syringe. You'd also want a syringe for flushing things out. So, like, just no needle on it, just the syringe part that you could fill with water and flush things out.
Perfect.
Just to clean out wounds and stuff.
We used to do that in school. We would get, like, syringes without a needle in them and use them to spray each other.
Yeah. They're great for squirt guns.
Mm-hmm.
Not the needle, though.
Not the needle, folks.
Leave the needle out if you're going to let your kid play with it. There's my advice to you.
Man, they say this show isn't educational.
Several different sizes of speculums for various orifices of the body.
Remind me, what's a speculum?
A speculum, it depends on exactly what we're talking about. You can use like a gynecologic speculum, which is like a duckbill looking device that opens and you can use to insert inside the vagina and take a look in there. You can use various speculums to get a better look at the rectum, or there are ear speculums and there are speculums. They're all like just like devices that help you get a closer look inside
like
an orifice.
Spatula. Cause like people don't call anything a spatula.
Not a spatula.
No, I know it's not a spatula. I'm just saying the term speculum sounds like it's used for as many things as spatula is. There's no good consensus on what a spatula is. It irritates me.
That's a good point. Well, it's just
like
to kind of look.
The flat metal thing with the lines. That's what I think of. Like spatula city, spatulas.
Right.
But like also people call the like little flat spoons spatulas.
But that's a spoonula.
It's a spoonula. Count spoonula.
Speaking of spoons, you might have an ear spoon in your kit.
It's the greatest segue I've ever done on the show. It's the cleanest thing.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I called attention to it.
That you might have an ear spoon, which would be, as you can imagine, a little spoon used for cleaning out your ear. Sometimes they would get really fancy and have a toothpick on one end and a spoon on the other.
Again, your teeth, clean your ears.
Exactly. And there were very fancy ones. They're like gold. You can look at pictures if you're ever curious, if this is the kind of thing you're into, which apparently I am. Look at pictures of old ear spoons on the internet and you can find really fancy, like gold plated and like, you know, jewel inlaid ear spoons. So there you go. You might have a small kit of probes, various long sticks that
you can guess
probe
folks.
Things with. You may have cupping devices. We've talked about cupping on this show before, that for a good bit of history, and actually currently, some people believe that cupping would in one way shift humors. That was the origin of it, was to pull humors away from or towards different parts of the body. And so you would have the little glass cups. They were usually glass at the time, and then some lint that you would have with them so that you could set fire to the lint to use it to create a vacuum inside the cup and then put that on the skin and create a big, nasty, ugly looking bruise.
For medicine.
For medicine. And then maybe catch your patient on fire.
Who knows?
Try not to.
Seems lively.
A trephine for trepanation.
Ah, good. There's my guy.
Yeah. So you might want to have a handheld little head drill.
Just in case you on just, the go.
Yeah. And I mean, largely at this point in history, they were being used for like traumatic skull injuries. So somebody gets stepped on by a horse, and we know that we didn't quite understand why, but the brain was going to swell. We know that those pieces of skull are going to be a problem. And so drilling a hole in the head would have been not an inappropriate treatment at the time.
The good kind of trepanation that does exist.
Now, this was still done under absolutely like no sterile conditions.
Oh, yeah,
no,
yeah, yeah.
You know, you're not washing your hands or the trephine or anything. So I wouldn't say it's like the best kind of trepanation.
No, yeah, but it's like.
Yeah, but not done for fun.
Yeah.
You may have dental tools. A lot of doctors at the time would pull teeth too.
Sure.
Because why not? They were
there already.
And it was a great show. You could do that in front of people and earn a few extra bucks.
Perfect.
And some fame. You would probably have one of those little alcohol lamps. Those just for light. You know, those little teeny lamps
that
run on alcohol. Those are very common to find in doctor's kits. And you might have some things like little glass bottles or slides or something if you wanted to collect samples to take back to wherever your doctor lab is to analyze.
And wait for someone to invent the microscope.
Well, I think we have and we have, and you might have some leather straps or like tourniquets kind of things to use, or maybe because you needed restraints if you were going to do something incredibly painful. And then, like I said, without getting into the medicines too much yet, it would be very common to have some little ampules full of opiates of some sort. That was very common just for pain relief. And then after the 1860s, cocaine was a very common thing to find in a lot of doctor's kits. So,
what about snacks? You haven't mentioned a snack, but I'm assuming a doctor on the go probably has a Cliff Bar or something, right?
at least in there. One of those little things that I love, one of those little containers that have like cheese and nuts and raisins.
Buck wild for those things, like the little trays. I'll see, like, did you eat lunch?
Called like a sweet escape or something.
I had one of my trays, and it's like, remember trays is like 30 white chocolate morsels and some raisins and some cubes of meat. And she's
cheese. I can't have cubes of meat right now. Just cheese.
That's right.
They're delicious. But no, unfortunately, these old timey doctors would not have had them. You wouldn't find bandages. I thought this was worth mentioning. If you noticed, I didn't mention anything about any kind of bandaging material. It would have been really bulky for doctors to carry around because we're talking about like cloth bandages time.
Like come up with something.
It would have been a big waste of space in your bag, and you really would have expected the patient's family to supply those to you. So basically you show up and if you need bandages, the patient's family is going to tear up some sheets or whatever to give you those.
If I had to guess, and this is like complete conjecture on my part, but if I had to guess, I would bet you probably had to be ready to deal with like first aid type stuff on your own. Like,
yes.
By the time you
there were no there was no EMT there.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
No, you're exactly right. And so like, well, yeah. So the bandages probably would have been come up from the family. And that kind of thing was actually expected. We mentioned this a long time ago in one of our childbirth episodes that like when you went to the hospital to have a baby, you would bring your own like bandages and or not like bandages, but like sheets and blankets and towels and all that stuff, like a basin to put water in. Like you provided all that stuff that just they didn't have it for you back then. There wasn't any need for antiseptic. You might have noticed I didn't mention that because we didn't know that that was a thing.
There was a need for antiseptic.
Well, there was a need, but we didn't understand it. We didn't believe it. We were still really mad that Semmelweis brought up hand washing and decided not to do it. Well, at some point in this time period, depending on where you are. But anyway, so we weren't washing our hands and we didn't worry about antiseptic. And again, about delivering babies, most docs weren't doing it, so you wouldn't need any kind of obstetrical equipment. Back then, it was largely midwives. And especially if we're talking about doctors who are going from house to house. If people are having home deliveries, midwives are doing that. So, so you really wouldn't see a lot of docs carrying a ton of obstetrical equipment around unless that was something that they had a specialized interest in, or they knew that's what they were coming for. Mm-hmm. No blood pressure cuffs, no sphygmomanometers.
Oh, that just seems like such a natural part of the...
Not around yet.
Doctor's bag.
Not around.
Not around. No. What about... Okay, so what about medicine?
Well, Justin, I'm going to tell you about medicine, but first, why don't we head to the billing department?
Let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre
for the mouth. I have really enjoyed experimenting with fashion, thanks to Quince. Now, I know that that sounds wild coming from me, Justin McElroy, a podcaster. Why, Justin, are you even wearing clothes? I hear you. But when I want to try a new look, what I love about Quince is they have a lot of different clothing items that are at a great price and are really well made. So if you want to try something, you're not sure if it's like, is this going to be the right fit for me? I don't know. Try it out with Quince. There's craftsmanship that you see in every detail of these clothes. I've bought several, like a pair of shorts I love, a pair of pants I wear literally every day. I mean, nearly every day, not literally every day. You know what I mean? Because there's some days you're just like, you can't. But I've been so happy with the pieces that we have gotten from Quince. And also there's a really wide variety of stuff. You know, there's silk tops, skirts for dressing up, denim for everyday wear. I don't mention a lot of the specific items because honestly, you shouldn't trust me about that part of it if it's outside my specific range of clothes for my body. But I will say this, for my body, Quince does right. It sounds weird now that I say it like that. Find gifts so good you'll want to keep them with Quince. Go to quince.com/sawbones for free shipping on your order. 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/sawbones to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/sawbones. You know, it's tempting to say, I'm going to start on the big new thing. You know, when the new year comes, I'm going to get it all figured out. Here's what I want to tell you. There's never been a better time to start your dream than right this second. And there's never been a better way to start than with Squarespace. We've been telling you about Squarespace for years, and that's because it's simply the best way to make a website. I mean, there's no other way to put it than that, folks. People have been using Squarespace to make incredible professional-looking websites. And they look professional because of the templates that they're using. They are made by real web designers. So they're making, like, building blocks that are going to look great. You just bring your stuff, your images, your things you want to sell, any of that. And Squarespace is going to help you make a great platform for it. Head to squarespace.com/sawbones for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code sawbones to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
So you promised me, Sydney, medicine, and I want medicine.
That's right, Justin. So like I said, any doctor might carry medicines with them, and especially if they had medicines they were making, because that was not uncommon to find a doctor who also kind of made their own little concoctions. But specifically, if you were a homeopath, you probably carried a collection of...
Lies.
I don't know. I was going to say medications, but... The loose use of the word there.
Loosey-goosey made-up card.
Some bottles of water. Or perhaps an herbalist. You probably would carry a separate box full, not just dedicated to your medicines. I mean, because you may be able to fit that all in the one doctor bag, but you'll see a lot of old medical kits that are just the medicines, kind of separate mm-hmm. from everything else. And you would carry some of the basics, such as like some of the early like antibacterials. We didn't know that's what they were, but we knew that these were good for putting on wounds. They did something. We didn't know why. Things to make like poultices.
Right.
Like to help things heal, or what we thought were drawing out poison, toxin. We didn't know, again, infection.
Just kind of playing it by ear.
Yeah, that kind of thing. You might have some willow bark.
Which was used...
For pain
because it was made aspirin.
Exactly. Or very good.
Acetylcholic acid.
Acetylsalicylic acid. Stop.
Alec Baldwin acid.
You might have some medicinal brandy in there. Wink. So just some alcohol with something in it, because why not? Laudanum was a staple.
I'm gonna make a line of brandy called It's Medicine, and that uh-huh. will be the brand. And you just say, oh, no, this?
It's medicine. And you definitely, like I said, would want to have some laudanum because it was good for everything because it made you feel so good. And especially back in the 1800s, you would give it to a woman who complained about anything because that's what we did.
Sorry, everybody.
So you had to have the laudanum. Laudanum for the ladies.
Laudanum for the ladies. Ladies laudanum.
A lot of these that I'm going to talk about may be in the form of powder. So you would actually, they would like wrap them in little squares of paper, like newspaper or something like that. So you'd have a bunch of teeny little packets.
You see that in old-timey movies a lot.
Mm-hmm. Like a little packet of some, take a powder. That was like a common, just take a powder. It was a common turn of phrase. There might be some liquids or tonics or tinctures in there. A lot of things that might need to be reconstituted. So like this is, you know, you can take a couple drops of this. There's your eyedropper. Take some drops of this and put it in some brandy. And there you go. Some kind of alcohol to reconstitute it. That was very common. And then some doctors would take the time to actually make their own tablets out of some of these different things. It just depended on, again, kind of how into it they were.
Yeah. How much they want to work.
This is a very loose science at this point. Yeah. This is more of a hobby.
You probably need a machine to make pills, right? At least some sort of tool, I would think.
Yeah, something to press it into a pill shape.
They would carry around or just do at home.
I didn't find any mention of that. Just because I think it would be bulky.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think you would probably want to make them at home and carry them with you. Yeah. Or just carry the powder. It'd be easier and lighter.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you could think about how many you could stack of just little packets of powder in your bag. In addition, some things you might carry around, and a lot of these I was able to just find a bunch of old medical kits and like look at all the different bottles in them and try to figure out what were common themes. Cream of tartar to use as a laxative was not uncommon.
Whoa.
Yeah, I didn't know that it would do that.
Me neither.
I mean, don't try that at home.
Consider how I make my meringues now.
There's something called manna. Not that manna.
Not from heaven.
No, it's from plants. It's just plant material that, again, will work as a laxative. So it was not uncommon to find a bottle labeled manna, and it would be from various plants. Anything that worked as a laxative was very popular. There was something called turkey rhubarb, which I only enjoyed because the bottle actually said tincture of fine turkey rhubarb.
Sounds delicious.
Which it does. It sounds pretty good. Yeah. Turkey rhubarb. I don't know what that was supposed to do for you. I just don't like turkey rhubarb. Some castor oil, some peppermint water.
Or an emetic, I guess I should say. Don't want to get really fancy.
Some peppermint water, which would help with vomiting, diarrhea. Yes.
You mean farts?
Yes, honey. Yes. Lavender was a common herb you would find, like some sort of preparation of lavender, mm-hmm. For digestion and depression. So that's a nice little combo for you.
And listen, if you're sad about how much your tummy hurts, it's the perfect remedy.
There you go. Then take some lavender. We've talked before about Epsom salts. Those are very popular for soaking things in, and at times they would advise ingesting them. I would not advise that.
Don't.
But you would carry some Epsom salts with you. And then you may have some patent medicines in there.
Oh, yeah.
Now, not all doctors were fans of the patent medicines. Many of them found them to be kind of hoaxes, as they were, because they contain things like alcohol and opium and...
Well, and I would imagine if you're a doctor, that you probably have a healthy amount of... If you're a working physician who's actually trying to do science-based stuff, you probably have a pretty healthy skepticism of non-doctors trying to sell medicine.
Exactly.
They made up in their basement.
Exactly. And so there's definitely friction there. So not all doctors would have carried any patent medicines. And the ones they would have chosen to carry, probably they would have been pretty particular about. Mm-hmm. But then you find some patent medicines that were using ingredients that even doctors were recommending. So these might have been like easy preparations for them to carry along with them. So like one example would be something like Dr. Steer's chemical opodeldoc. This was a word I was unfamiliar with.
It's a fairly clumsy portmanteau, it seems.
Yes. So opodeldoc is a kind of cure-all. And I had to read about what this is, because Dr. Steer's is not the only one who made one of these. His in particular was used for aches, pains, bruises. It was made of soap, spirit of wine, camphor, rosemary oil, and sometimes spirit of ammonia. But the original Oppo Del Doc dates back to Paracelsus, who we've talked about before, mm-hmm. bombastic Paracelsus,
yeah.
who made a liniment from it that was maybe named for the different herbs that were in it. This is one theory. Opoponax, Bdellium, and Aristolochia. And maybe from that he put it together into Oppo Del Doc. I don't know.
Sure.
Theory is as good as any, I guess. Where else did he come up with
it? It smelled like a portmanteau.
And yeah, I mean, it sounds like something that probably was just kind of stuck together. It does not roll off the tongue. And these were things that were already being used for various medicinal purposes. His also had soap, alcohol, camphor, and then could have some other herbal elements in addition to those. And this theme of an Oppo Del Doc became so popular kind of in culture and like what everybody recognized as a kind of cure-all that someone might have made of various substances, that the name Ode Oppo Del Doc was like a stock character for a lot of different like plays and writings from the time. So you would have a physician that was named that in the play. They would kind of be like comic relief. Poe used the name as a pseudonym for a character in the literary life of Thingum Bob Esquire. Mm-hmm. And this Oppo Del Doc would have been very widely used during Poe's life. Oh, so I'd never heard of this before.
Oppo Del Doc. It's kind of a mouthful.
It is. But you may have found some variety of Oppo Del Doc in there. Usually a sarsaparilla-based medicine. Those were very popular at the time. Mm-hmm. So Ayers, sarsaparilla medicine was a very common one. There were lots of other ones, but anything with sarsaparilla.
Wish we got an opportunity to say more often.
Sarsaparilla. Celery-based medicines were incredibly popular. We've talked about Lydia Pinkham's before.
Oh, she's great. Still find it. Lydia Pinkham's out there.
Yep. So then the kind of vegetable-based medicines or celery-based medicines were very popular. Blister plasters, like a mustard plaster. These were to use, we've talked about these before, to use as like a counter-irritant. So sure. You have inflammation or infection or something going on somewhere in the body, and you put this plaster on healthy skin somewhere else. It will irritate the skin and cause inflammation there, drawing blood away from the site of injury or illness and making you better.
Making you more annoyed.
So you might find these in a doctor's kit. Maybe some strychnine.
In case it just got too much.
We've talked about that. Strychnine was used in medication for a while. So maybe some strychnine, maybe some mercury. It was a very popular cure for syphilis.
Oh.
Also in the form of calomel for any kind of stomach complaint.
Perfect, man.
Yeah. So
thank you, patent medicines. You sure did have a wide range of uses.
So it would not be uncommon to find mercury in a doctor's bag. And then
hopefully it didn't open, because that's like your whole day.
That's it. Well, that's what those old thermometers were probably good for.
Yeah.
They just broke open and then you let your patient eat what was inside.
I guess.
And they cure their syphilis. Anything that generally caused sweating or peeing or vomiting or pooping was considered a good thing.
I mean, you drive all the way out to the person's house on a horse and they want something to happen.
Well, actually, you hit on a point I wanted to make, which is that a lot of times patients did not feel that they had been cared for unless they were given some kind of medication. And so medicines like these that would produce some sort of visible result were very popular, because then you knew the doctor gave you something that worked, which could have been a very powerful placebo effect. And in fact, some doctors actually carried literal placebos with them.
Just to like...
They would carry sugar pills.
That's so good.
Just to give... If they knew it was something there was nothing to do for, or they thought was going to go away on its own or whatever, but they also knew that the patient would be very dissatisfied with that answer, they would give them sugar pills.
Oh, that's so good.
So that was actually... Now, this is totally unethical. We do not do that anymore. That is not a thing that we do. But back then... No, we don't. We really don't.
Why are you winking?
No, I'm not.
Cindy's
Stop telling
not,
people
Cindy's
that.
Not winking.
And a portable drug kit could hold anywhere from 12 to 36 vials of some sort of powdered medicine, just depending on. And you can, again, these are really cool to look up, all just the different varieties.
Are they cool, Sydney? Are they cool to look
yes,
up?
Yes, they're very cool. Shut up. Just one note, if you were a military surgeon, a lot of this you would probably find useless.
right?
A battlefield, triage, right? Yes, a battlefield surgeon would want to carry a lot of some sort of opiate for pain control, which makes sense. Lancets and scalpels and sutures, mm-hmm, obviously makes sense. And then you would have a whole other box just full of really big knives and saws.
The no-no box.
And you can probably imagine what those were used for.
Yes. Cooking up a mean get-well lunch for all your friends, and you use that to carve the meat or to cut the vegetables. And
No. Amputations.
Well, that's going to do it for us this week, folks. Thank you so much for joining us. Hold on. Wait. Shut the bag. The bag's all shut, and that's going to do it for us.
We'll have to look into some more medical bags from, I don't know. Maybe we can find some ancient medical bags and see what's inside.
We'll also have to look into some more devices for Foley work if we're going to go down that road. thank you so much. Hey, if you want to tweet about the show, at Sawbones is our Twitter account. So you can tweet at us or just tweet about the show. Tell people to go listen to it, because that's how we get other people to listen to it. So please do it. Okay.
Thanks. I mean, thanks in advance. We appreciate that.
Thank you to the Maximum Fun Network for letting us be a part of their podcasting family. We sure appreciate them. Oh, here's a bit of good news. It isn't necessarily podcast related, but Bullseye, one of the Max Fun shows that is also on public radio stations, is coming to Huntington.
To
West Virginia Public Radio. So. Check their website for listings. Bullseye is a pop culture show hosted by Jesse Thorne, who runs Max Fun. And it is great. Thank you. Did I thank the taxpayers?
You can thank them again. Just they're great.
Thank you so much for letting us use your song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. Thank you for listening. But that is going to do it for us. So until next week, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.
How's it going, everyone? I'm Oliver Wang.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. We have a brand new show on the Maximum Fun Network that we'd love to share with you. It's called Heat Rocks.
Morgan, we should probably explain what a heat rock is.
It is a banger, a fire track, true fire.
Right, dope album. Each episode, we will bring on a special guest to join us to talk about one of their heat rocks. It might be a musician.
A writer.
Maybe a scholar.
I mean, I would have been happy to just talk to you about your heat rocks, but this is a different show.
Yeah, so. I think people might enjoy hearing maybe the guests instead.
To do that, you'll have to go to MaximumFun.org. So if you want to talk about hot music, you should check us out.
Heat Rocks.